You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news in technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Kick-Ass Politics is sponsored by Fiverr. You've heard me rave about Fiverr before. That's Fiverr with two R's. Fiverr is the world's largest online marketplace for services, with over 100 categories all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. Logo design, business consulting, marketing, business cards and stationery, web design, translation, proofreading, legal consulting, and just about any other service you can imagine, all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. And right now, if you go to kickasspolitics.com and click on the Fiverr ad on our sponsor page, you'll be showing your support for the show, and you'll get some great offers on services tailored to your needs. Whatever you need done, find it on Fiverr. And before we start the show, I want to ask for you, the listeners, help with a special project. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be doing a listener survey to get a better idea of who our audience is. No matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show, we'd like to get to know you better and what you want. So I hope you'll visit our website at kickasspolitics.com and click on the listener survey link on the homepage, or there's a survey link in the show notes to this episode. It'll only take 60 seconds. We won't ask for your personal information or put you on some list. I'm not going to call you up at supper time or fill your email with spam, I promise. In fact, you can even fill out the survey anonymously if you want. It's just a few quick questions to help us understand who's listening, and seriously, it'll be a huge, huge help to me personally. Thanks in advance, folks, and now enjoy the podcast. Hi there. I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. My guest today is Mike Pesca. He's the host of The Gist, a wildly popular podcast from the folks over at Slate Magazine. And before that, he spent 15 years at NPR, where he served as national correspondent covering sports, culture, and politics. And he was the first NPR reporter to have his very own podcast way back in the early days of podcasting in 2005. Now he's the host of Slate's The Gist podcast 5 days a week, and he's a weekly panelist on Slate's Hang Up and Listen podcast. He's won two Edward R. Murrow Awards for excellence in electronic journalism, but he's perhaps best known for his daily op-ed segment on the podcast, or as he calls it, The Spiel. Well, today he's on my podcast to deliver one of his signature spiels on everything from the House Speaker's race and the filibuster to online gambling and his ongoing battle with Starbucks over a reduced fat turkey bacon breakfast sandwich. Coming up with Mike Pesca in just a moment.
It's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
My guest today is Mike Pesca. He's host of Slate Magazine's podcast, The Gist. Mike, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for ambushing me. I you walked into the room with your mic and your recorder on, and you ambushed me and you asked me, what was the question you asked me? You're asking everyone today?
I'm asking everyone if there's one systemic fix for our political dysfunction. Everyone pretty much thinks that we're in a state of dysfunction. What would your fix be? And yours was?
Mine was try harder not to be a jerk.
Yeah. Now, that's an interesting question because you're the only one who, by the way, I think that's good advice. And I did frame it as you could change the Constitution or just snap your fingers and be like God and get your wish fulfilled. That probably would help things. 5 out of 7 people have said, though, campaign finance. People of all stripes.
Really? Oh, yeah. They're more serious than I am, I guess.
Well, I think it's because, you know, I'm not just asking people who are casual. I'm asking political insiders. And I think they know what when I ask that question, they're saying, what is the worst part of my job? And that's it, you know, trying to wrangle these donors. And both right and left have said that, you know, the solution on the right is just don't have any rules because these, or I wouldn't say don't have any rules, but allow unlimited funding, but disclosure, which I think is maybe even more logical than this hodgepodge of super PACs and black money. And it's no answer.
Well, yeah, because isn't it kind of BS, this whole thing that we're going to actually have campaign finance reform and fix the problem? Because, you know, money's like water. And one way or another, the money's going to get to the candidate.
Yeah. And I think that you could even argue that it has gotten too far. And I know that it obsesses politicians and that's the majority of their job. But if you can't appeal to people who are big donors, I don't know if that's a disqualification for running for office, but it's certainly something. And it's also not the case that you can't run for office if, you know, you're not in the pocket of big business. That's, you know, that's a canard. So, yeah. And if you look at Canadian politics, they wring their hands so much about the amount of money in their politics and the length of it's the longest election season for a prime minister, and it's like 70 something days.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
So are Canadians just complainers?
Canadian? Well, yeah, but I don't know. I think the Canadians are just like us, only a little bit better and a little bit colder.
Colder, you mean the people or the climate?
No, yeah, I mean their actual body temperatures.
Oh, okay.
2 degrees Celsius, yeah.
So you didn't get any other answers other than campaign finance? Any other interesting ones?
Clay Aiken, who impressed me as someone who talked about issues a little better than I thought he would.
Well, he did run for Congress, right?
Yeah, didn't do well.
Yeah.
And also did a reality show that he revealed afterwards he was doing during his run for Congress. So okay. I guess that's, I mean,
I'm
look,
expecting Trump to do the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, well, I think this is we're unwittingly in his reality show. I was going to say, if Trump's the front runner, you can't fault him for that, except he lost by a wide margin. He was running in a very Republican district. But he did the campaign finance thing. But then he said, what about nonpartisan commissions to draw up every congressional district? Not a bad idea. Some
Makes
states
sense.
Have it. It's not a huge fix, though. It's not a huge fix.
You don't think so?
I think that it was presented as such. If you go back a few years before, 2010, how could the Democrats even bust through? Because they had all these stats about Democrats are winning presidential elections, and it looks like more people would want to vote Democrat, but it's just the way the states are drawn. And in the New Yorker, there was a pretty authoritative article by Jeffrey Toobin saying this. And then there's a wave. Like, no matter how you draw the district, then there's a wave and it sweeps it away. And what we're looking at now with, I think, a lot of what's going on in Congress and the inability to elect a speaker is because these congressional districts are drawn so much that you have all these extremely safe seats for the only challenge will come from the right. Is that what even the Republican, do you think all the Republicans drawing the district are Freedom Caucus Republicans? I think they might be saying, oh my God, this is a nightmare, and we're the Frankenstein who created the monster.
But gerrymandering goes on both sides.
It's
just like the campaign finance.
Well, that's
why
it's a decent solution.
Sides, they're going to take advantage of it if it's offered to them. So the idea of having some kind of a nonpartisan way to figure out districts, could that work?
Yeah, it does work. I mean, Iowa does it pretty well. And California was considering doing it, right? And it's still in the courts. I think
I don't know that it would even matter in California.
Well, it's very, but it, you know,
that's like doing it in Alabama.
California and Texas are really important in terms of like textbooks and car emissions.
All right. Yeah.
Because, you got to, so if you lead the way just based on consumer products. But I think that the problem is that no one wants to do it because every party in power, no one ever says we're in power now, but we're not going to be in power. When you're in power, you press your advantage, and also you right what you perceive as the wrongs of the past. Hey, they did it to us. We're going to do it to them. Anything that could get either political party out of that mindset, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah.
We did it to us. They do it to them. You know, even the way the use of the filibuster rule in Congress. Hey, now's our turn to stick it to the other guy. And any time you could take away that incentive, it's probably true in life as well as in politics. Change the dynamic, right? I have two sons. sons, and it's always there's like this long history of retribution between them.
I know.
But if you could ever just change it, like, hey guys, we're not going to argue over the iPad. We're playing outside, and then you take away that thing that we're fighting.
It's like Rwanda. It's like the Hutus and the Tutsis, or you know, it's like whoever's in power, you know, wreaks havoc on the loser.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, it's the reverse,
and they all feel themselves as the righteous. Yes.
Well, you mentioned the speaker's race. Any thoughts on that whole insane situation this week?
Well, on the gist, so every day if you listen to my podcast, it's five times a day and I end with a spiel. And sometimes the spiel, 5 to 7 minutes, it's often on politics. But earlier this week, I don't know if you saw that story with girls who were taking selfies at a baseball game. So I did I did a version of the Field of Dreams speech about selfies and stuff. So it can be anything. But I was talking about this, and I have to say that the Freedom Caucus, their big agenda items, I disagree with. I think the XM Bank, it's fine. Like, you know, I don't think it's terribly great or terribly bad. I think it's fine. I think it probably helps people. Funding Planned Parenthood, I'm in favor of. And what was their other huge issue? I don't know. Bitcoin. No, I have no. It just seems if you go down the list of the things, if you go down the list of the things they want, the agenda items, I disagree with them. Yeah. But if you try to empathize with what they feel like the disenfranchised people who've won elections and can't get anything done. And the reason they can't get anything done is because all these rules of the Senate. And while out of the one side of our mouth, we're saying the Senate is so dysfunctional, it's so sclerotic. But if you try to do anything to upend those rules, well, that's a breach of comity. That's trying to change the grand Senate traditions. Filibuster goes back to 1917. Right. It's not in the Constitution. And I totally understand we won an election. We have the will of the people on the side. People didn't send us here to get along with either other Republicans or Democrats. They sent us here to pass an agenda. So they're trying to pass their agenda. And I empathize with that. On the other hand, this is what the media can't say. The tame stream media, I coined the phrase. They can't say what the Freedom Party wants is wrong. I mean, maybe you think that they do, but I think in their even-handed way, they say, well, they're against the what critics of Planned Parenthood say are this, but what Planned Parenthood defends is that. They can't flat out say, you know, these Freedom Party caucus members, they want to defund Planned Parenthood come hell or high water, and it's a bad idea because of X, Y, and Z. What they can say is there's dysfunction, there's chaos, there's so they could. They're like film critics or theater critics. They could criticize the affect, but they stop themselves from talking about the root causes. And the affect it's always going to flow from what the root causes are.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy to me that 30 or 40 congressmen can basically run Congress at this point.
But
and
as
I'm not
I pointed
talking
out,
about I'm not talking about the so-called you know, the so-called insiders,
fat cats.
Yeah, the fat cats.
Yeah.
So So you have like these 30 or 40 guys who are pretty new in Congress. You know, they haven't really cut their teeth on much. And
it is funny that the main thing they want to do is end the filibuster because they hate the fact that 40 senators can upend the will of the 60. So these 40 representatives are trying to upend the rule of the 200 other Republicans in the House. That's their fix.
Yeah.
No, but I understand the frustration. I think Ted Cruz is actually ideologically pure. But I think life and being an adult isn't about purity, right? It's not about purity of vision. It's about, among other things, working and getting along and picking hills to die on.
Yeah, and I've had this conversation with a number of people. Is there just no such thing as negotiating? It's the only tool in our tool belt these days is if we don't 100% get our way, walk away from the table. It's like that's not much of a strategy.
Right. Well, you know, I guess the Tea Party would say we've already negotiated. Like the fact that Planned Parenthood is funded to the extent it is for things other than abortions, which I'm sure they disagree with. By the way, remember the time when it was like, Tea Party, they're not really a religious party. I know they're not exactly perfectly religious, but there's a huge overlap between the family values crowd and the Tea Party crowd. But anyway, they'd say, we're living in a state of compromise. And after a while, if you compromise with a compromise, it's just called giving up.
Yeah.
But I just think they're wrong. My point is I think they're wrong. Not in general. I think they're wrong on
wrong
the issues.
What?
I think
on
that,
the issue. Okay.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if I were, first of all, I like to empathize. I like to put myself in the, not just for strategic purposes. So take the issue of an abortion where I'm pro-choice, okay? But I understand that someone who is against abortion thinks of it exactly as infanticide. Change the word from abortion to infanticide. Then you'll never say something like, I believe in a woman's right to choose. To choose what? Infanticide? So I understand.
Should they start using that term?
Who?
Would that be a good strategy?
Pre-infanticide? It probably would be. You know, what we're talking about. Well, they say baby killer, so.
Yeah.
But the point is, so if you're the Tea Party and you're like, we are doing business, we are giving funds to this large infanticide provider, and sure, maybe they help, you know, maybe they help give breast cancer screenings to poor people, but can't we find another way to do it? So I understand the Tea Party's position on that. I disagree with it. And there, here's John Boehner, others of his ilk, but he's the big one, who says, yeah, I totally agree with you. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow the infanticide machine to continue. Like, you'd hate him. You'd probably hate him more than the people like me who are pro-choice. So I understand the dysfunction. I really do.
I guess people can probably figure this out from our conversation so far. You started at NPR.
Yes.
After 10 years at NPR, you left for Slate Magazine about a year and a half ago to start your show, The Gist. How has that transition been for you? Because you don't seem like an NPR kind of guy.
It's true. And when I was at NPR, first of all, like...
No soft voice.
Yes, no hushed tones drawing you in. As the gravel was under her footsteps, she realized that the buffalo would never rehabilitate.
I'm about to cry.
Yeah.
Or get turned on. I don't know.
Right. Or buy a tote bag or something. Yeah. So, yeah, at NPR, I was definitely viewed as a spicy salsa that you don't want to eat with every meal. But I did sports for a number of years. And, you know, if you're people at NPR know what good broadcasting is, and they know that if they don't do anything to stop it, their shows will just be filled up with serious people talking about serious issues. So I was very valued as a sports reporter who talked in a different way, who said funny things, who made analogies, who made sports a little bit interesting. And for a couple years, for 5 years, I've been doing a show with Slate called Hang Up and Listen, a sports show. And Andy Bowers, who runs all of the Slate podcasts, lured me, kept saying we could do a daily show. I'm like, I really believe you could do a daily show. I like what I'm doing at NPR. Like, I have these, I like politics. Before I did sports, I covered politics. I covered the Kerry campaign. I went to the conventions. You know, and I'm definitely plugged
you're pretty
in.
Pretty eclectic.
Yeah, exactly. I like culture. I like talking about things other than sports. I'm often asked to guest host other shows where I interview actors or politicians. And I like that. I like having the broad range. So some of the bad things for me with NPR was the hushed dulcet thing. But also, hey, you're a sports guy. That's your niche. I didn't think that NPR was particularly valuing me or was really, you know, aggressive and expansive in defining what their shows could be. Andy at Slate was saying it could be whatever you want. It could be on the news. You could riff on the news. It was really, really interesting. For years, I resisted it because I liked my job. People would say, you get to go to the World Series and the Super Bowl for NPR. That's kind of a dream job. It kind of is. But then finally, about a year and a half ago, I took the leap and I said, we could do it. And it's been going great. The transition is great. It calls upon me to think of an idea. Like I said, every day I do a spiel. It's 7 minutes long. It's essentially an op-ed a day. And there's no op-ed writer in America. There are bloggers, but, you know, who does an op-ed a day? So it forced me to think a lot to maybe have, you know, in the past, if I said, oh, I won, that might be true, but I won't pursue it. I won't interrogate that feeling I have internally. Now I'm like, okay, I got to work this out. I got to put that down. I got to read it into a microphone. But I find it very interesting and very exciting.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot of pressure doing a show every day like that.
Yeah, I have a great producer named Andrea Salenzi. We book a lot of guests. So every day I start off with one segment where it's, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. I view it like, I guess the closest analogy is it's not a monologue. It's like when Colbert, after he does his monologue, if you've watched the CBS show, he sits down and does a desk piece.
Yeah.
So it's a few jokes or a few observations about something in the news. It's usually jokey, but, you know, I've also, if it's one of those days after one of these mass shootings, I'll start off a little depressed, as I think the news warrants, and, you know, kind of hopefully say something a little pithy and with meaning. And then we go on to the show. I have 1 or 2 interviews, either a long one or 2 medium ones, you know, so either a 15-minute interview, 2 7-minute interviews, and then I do my spiel. People get out of there in 25 minutes. I respect people's time. The average commute is 25 minutes. That's why I try to make it 20-ish minutes.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. Yeah, you got to keep it within the what is it they say? The perfect podcast is 25 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes.
You know, when you get
the average workout or drive time.
You listen to so many podcasts, and you get one, and it's like you see that like 1 hour, 43-minute time signature. I'm like, oh my God, how do I even crack this?
Well, that's just using up memory on my phone.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah.
All the comedy ones, right? All the free comic explorations. That's great, guys. Maybe edit it and give me the funny parts.
Why is it that all the comedian podcasts are so long?
It's a little self-indulgent.
I mean, I do listen to Gilbert Gottfried, and his is a long one, but I always love that. He's always a lot of fun.
He's great.
Well, you mentioned that you do, you know, kind of...
Past just guest, by the way, and our kids go to school
What's
together.
That?
Gilbert and I, Gilbert's a past just guest, and our kids go to school together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, was he a good guest?
He's a great guest.
Fun.
Turned it on. We talked about all the bird roles he's played. Very good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he's done he's the Aflac duck.
He was the duck.
Goose in something, Jack and the Beanstalk or something.
Yep, and he was Jafar's bird in
Aladdin. Oh, that's right,
Aladdin,
the parrot, of course.
And he's this like space bird in a PBS show called Cyber Chase.
Wow.
He's played a bird a lot.
I don't know what
Get
that says about
Gilbert
him.
Get me a Gilbert Gottfried type.
Well, yeah, and that's what Aflac said when they fired him. They said they basically auditioned for someone to be exactly like Gilbert Gottfried to
the
replace
new guy's
him.
Like, Aflac, without the offensive jokes about the tsunami.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and then I'll be back to talk more with Mike Pesca, host of The Gist.
This portion of the podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks available to download for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, Kick-Ass Politics listeners can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com and go get your free audiobook. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics. Or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us producing new and interesting programs in the future. That's GoFundMe.com/kickasspolitics. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Mike Pesca, host of Slate's The Gist podcast. You mentioned that you do your spiel, which is basically kind of, I guess, you know, some people would say it's a rant or it's an op-ed or whatever,
right.
Whatever's sticking in your craw on that particular day. I'm sure you get this a lot, but do people ever ask you, have you always been this opinionated?
Yeah, but I try to. Okay. When you're listening to one person spiel or rant or whatever, it's hard not to feel like you're being assaulted. But I'm deluded, but I really try to be open-minded. And I also like to lay out my thought process and show the work. So I actually don't think my first mode is like first have an opinion. I actually ask more questions than I have an opinion. But it's also really satisfying. I mean, people want to hear. I mean, op-eds do a few things. They can raise questions. They could reframe an issue. But sometimes it's really satisfying just to be like, I wish I'd said that, just to say the thing that people are thinking. So after the Oregon shooting, I just took a bunch of clips from different politicians, you know, making the regular kind of excuses. Mm-hmm. And I said, now use these counter arguments in any social setting. So you hear Ricky Rubio, listen to that. He's the point guard on the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
You hear Marco Rubio saying, you know, once we the problem with passing gun laws are that once we pass those gun laws, criminals don't respect gun laws. So there's no point in passing gun laws because criminals don't respect them. And I said, that is a great argument, not against gun laws. That's a great argument against laws. Why ban anything criminals don't respect? In fact, isn't that the definition of criminalization? If you keep doing it, you are a criminal. Yeah.
So what do you think?
It doesn't
should
make
we ban
sense.
All laws?
It doesn't make no. They shouldn't ban all.
No,
no. Definitely.
Are there any laws that you wouldn't mind banning?
Are there laws I wouldn't mind?
Wouldn't
banning?
Mind getting rid of or
gun-wise?
Or just ignoring any law?
Yeah, definitely. I think we were talking about California and Texas, but I go to California and I did a winery tour, and they have like all these warnings about the copper in the bowl could kill you, or, you know, all these things that, come on, simple common sense says you don't have to have that warning up.
Yeah.
Sure, there are definitely, I did a rant on this. People, you know, who talk about regulation, which do away with regulation. No, let's do away with the bad regulation. The good regulation, we don't even call regulation. I guess it's regulation.
Just common sense.
Well, no, it's a regulation against murder.
Yeah.
That's regulated, isn't it? We don't allow stabbing to happen.
Yeah.
So we want the, but okay, even the, even given the regular laws. You know, when you build a deck, when a commercial company, I live in New York, they have scaffolding on every third street. You have to build it to code. I like code. I don't like onerous code. I don't like dumb code. And I even gave Democratic politicians advice. I said, you can show your credentials by saying this and saying, here are three regulations that aren't, that have nothing to do with me trying to promote solar energy. Just these are just three dumb regulations that we could get rid of so that people can make more money. A politician should do that, right?
Interesting. That might be a good bargaining chip if you were a Democrat politician. So you're saying, you know, there are some things that admittedly everyone, you know, even at least privately, a Democrat politician could say, okay, this is kind of stupid. But because they're afraid of, reducing government in any way, perhaps.
Offending
a labor union. Maybe if they were to give on this a little bit, then get a little bit of goodwill.
And to signal that you're doing it shows, doesn't that burnish your credentials as someone who's not against regulation, just against dumb regulation?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we should. In the last debate, was it Christie? He talked about cutting the law. We cut this many laws and that many laws. That alone means nothing. Doesn't it matter the quality of the laws you cut? The fact that that could get applause, well, I guess it speaks to the frustration people have. But it doesn't say anything. Great, you cut a law. Were they laws that we needed to protect us?
Yeah. I mean, it's like we don't need a law to tell us that we don't put our babies in the dryer or something.
Yeah, that's true.
There's certain things that are just common sense. Interesting. So I guess, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Does that ever happen to you on a podcast?
Yeah, but I stopped.
Does that ever drive you crazy? You must have gotten past that by now.
Only when you're with like a guest, you don't want to do
only
that.
When I'm starstruck like I am
exactly
right now, you
right.
know. Like you said, at NPR, you've kind of covered the gamut. You covered news, sports, economics, culture, art, gambling. You had a whole show on gambling. How did you land on that?
Basically, when podcasts were invented, I quickly said, what are they good for? Niche. They're good for a lot of things, but you can really talk to a specific niche.
Yeah.
This was a subject I knew a lot about. Before I worked for NPR, I started friends of mine and colleagues of mine tried to start a magazine called Jack, which was Jack Ace Queen King, which is a gambling magazine, a lifestyle men's magazine based on risk and reward. So I knew a lot about gambling. I would always report on that. I'm like, I could do a podcast every week about that.
Okay.
So, but it was not, hey, here's who to bet in the Louisiana State game. It was more like I'd interview John Daly about his slot machine habits. Or this was when my then wife and I, she was pregnant and they'd give us the odds of in vitro testing. And the way they presented them were all wrong. I'm like, let me tell you what the real odds are. So I would like redo the odds for real life things, just things that are more accessible to the non-addicted gambler. So you have to bring them along a little bit and try to teach them a little bit, not alienate anyone.
Well, where do you fall on the whole online gambling thing these days?
Yeah, well, this DraftKings and FanDuel, by the way, you know, if you do this business of ours, you'll probably take played ads from one of those two. And I know I have, but I put up pause on that. I press the pause button on doing those ads until we figure out what those two companies are up to with, you know, the insider trading. I think that online poker could work. I want the government involved, actually, so it can be regulated. It's a great example. It ties it back. When it was unregulated, when it was offshore, there were all these scandals. When was the last time there was an actual gambling cheating scandal in Las Vegas that wasn't someone trying to cheat the casino? In fact, sports leagues, Vegas, because they have a regulated industry, will see a weird movement on a line, and they will notify college basketballs when there's an actual example that happened and said, there's some weird gambling patterns going on. They investigated, and they found out some games were being thrown. So I think if these are real legitimate businesses brought into the tent, taxed, and regulated, it's better for everyone. And people are going to do it anyway, unregulated. And then who makes the money? Some, you know, offshore Antigua corporation. And then people get screwed in the process, too.
Well, yeah. And Sheldon Adelson, the guy who one of the richest men in America who owns the Venetian, he's spending millions of dollars to try and combat proposed legislation for online gambling.
Right.
And he's saying that it's immoral. People shouldn't be able to gamble in their homes. It just makes it too easy, too accessible.
Right.
Is that a little bit hypocritical or a lot? Maybe a lot hypocritical.
You should not be able to gamble any place that you are not within 40 feet of a fake canal. That is his. But some of the other Vegas people, probably because they have interests elsewhere, oppose Adelson on that.
Yeah.
But mostly the Vegas. Well,
Atlantic City somehow is counting on this to rescue Atlantic City, which sounds like the craziest idea to me.
Christie, it's been banned. Christie has tried to get legal gambling. It would help a little, but, you know, legalized gambling has proved to be fool's gold. I mean, you could get there is this recent trend of all these states legalizing gambling. It'll help our budget. It helps for a little while. Then your neighbor state sees what it does, and the third state sees what it does, and then your state is a very small part of the pie.
Yeah.
I'm not against legal gambling at all, but come on, don't sell it as a solution to profligate spending or bad management of state coffers.
So you covered gambling. You covered all these different topics when you were at NPR. Since you've moved to Slate, have you found yourself either naturally or feeling pressured to be more political by virtue of the audience?
I've always been this political. And the analogy I make is I always like sports and politics. When my job was sports, I would consume a lot of it and read a lot of it and kind of tell myself, oh, this is what I'd be doing otherwise. But you know what? It's not true. Like, I think last night was the WNBA finals, and I don't know who won. Now, if I was covering sports for NPR, I'd make it a point to know who won, and I'd tell myself, well, this is what I would do otherwise, right? And if I was a sports reporter, I would know that the Democratic debate was next week. But if you ask me, will O'Malley, Webb, and Chafee be in it? I might say, you know, I don't know. Will they be in it? But now I know they will. So
yeah,
and you just naturally more. You have a lot of interests, and then if it's also your job, you go a little bit deeper.
So you're in tune. I mean, how much time do you spend reading the news in the morning before you do a podcast?
Yeah, I drop off my son at school. I take the hard has to be an actual physical newspaper. Mm. I work
do the
elliptical machine for a half hour, 40 minutes, and that's a good amount of reading and germinating time. I make a list for myself of things I could talk about on the show. Before I did the show, I wondered, will I be able to get to a topic or two topics every day? And it's more than that. So I think of three or four. Some are bad. That's why I don't do them. Some that are bad. And I've been able to generate in my brain as much content as I need. I wondered if I could, and I can.
Yeah, no, you clearly can. And it's one of the most popular shows out there. You know, earlier in the week, I don't know if this was a spiel or is just an opener for your podcast. You have a problem with Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really a big problem for you because they forgot part of your order.
Yes.
And when you went back, they refused to fix it because you didn't have your receipt. So
I got two wraps and a biscuit, and they didn't give me my biscuit in the bag. So I went back. I'm like, guys, you didn't give me my biscuit. And I expected them to say, well, we can't give you a refund without a receipt. And I say, I understand that. You can just give me the biscuit. My kids are here. They're sure. They're like, no. I'm like, what do you mean? What do you think this is?
They thought you were trying to hustle them?
Yeah, this is a hustle. This is my game.
You're a grifter.
Yeah, I'm playing the long game. So anyway, I announced that my next $500 of coffee expenditure will be at places other than Starbucks. And I didn't want to be, you know, I don't want to be too indulgent. I only spent a few minutes on this. And it wasn't a call to arms. I didn't ask others to join me. But so far, it's been about a week, about $40 in. I'll get
to
$500. Not at all. You know, I don't know if you noticed this. There's a lot of coffee alternatives besides Starbucks. And I like Starbucks.
Yeah.
I will say that the Starbucks PR people or whatever, their team, tweeted me and say, how can we make this right?
Oh,
but I haven't responded because I made this commitment and I'm going to follow through.
There's no negotiation. What are you going to ask for?
So, well, after the 500 is done and I show that I could do it, I'd like my biscuit.
That's it.
Just give me my biscuit.
I think that they should name a drink after you.
Yeah, but then no
I think
one would
that's
know
the least
the size. Like, right. A venti is 20. A pesco, what's that? That's 18? Okay, I'll take a pesca.
Oh, yeah. That kind of has a nice ring to it.
It means Italian. Peach in Italian.
Yeah.
Oh, there could be a pesca. If there's a pumpkin latte, there could be a pesca
latte.
Oh,
there you go. So, okay. So why only $500? You didn't want to do a permanent ban?
I'm not a martyr here.
Okay.
You know, I don't need to cut off my nose despite my caffeine intake.
Anything else sticking in your craw these days?
What's got your gut?
Yeah aside from Congress and
the speaker. Here's something I just wrote down. There are phrases. I talk a lot about words. And I don't like when people, this is not their fault, but you ask a waiter and they'll say, no problem. Hey, can I have some water? No problems. Why are you injecting problems into this transaction? Whether it is a problem or not, like, why would it be a problem? Why do I have to think if it's a problem?
Yeah,
I totally understand it. It's the exact equivalent of yes, sir. But yes is a better answer than no problem. And I was just in Montenegro. And what they say is, of course. I like of course. Of course, it's much better than no problem.
Well, it's like when you go to places like Germany, instead of you're welcome, they say please.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Be my guest.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I like that. Well, yeah, because no problem implies, you know, people are paranoid. People, yeah. you know, passive aggressive and all that. That makes people suddenly start assuming that maybe there might be a problem.
Yeah. Oh, there's no, okay, maybe there's no problem with nice. That. Good. Woo. Yeah. Now, I was worried. Or the next thing, the butter. What if there's a problem? I don't know. I can't ask for three things. Eventually, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
If there's a this had nothing to do with our transaction.
Well, before we go, you're the son of a Catholic and a Jew.
That's true.
And I think what was the phrase that you say? You're Catholic-ish or something like that. Catholic a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you suffer more from Catholic guilt or Jewish guilt?
I don't have guilt.
Does that make you a sociopath?
No, I know. I just keep myself in check. But guilt's not a main part of my comportment. I'm not an anxious person. I think I have a condition called anandamide. I think it's pronounced. It was written up as the happiness gene, but I just don't. I'm a little scattered. I am not. I don't have great attention to detail. My girlfriend does. We make an excellent team, but I'm generally. So they said the three things about it are very low anxiety, tend to overeat. It is true. When I start to eat, and I keep going, and do not like the effects of marijuana, and that is also true. Like I have all three. I thought I might
I
have some.
I might have that too.
You don't? Yeah? Yeah. Are you're not an anxious person in general?
Almost to a fault. I have too many people who are saying, why aren't you worried about this?
Right.
You know, why aren't
what
you worried about
you?
This parking ticket?
If you can't like do that. Anything about yeah. it, what's the point? And anxious yeah. people say, well, it's not about that. I can't help it. Like, I guess I can't help it either, but on the other side, you're the same way.
Well,
that's
yeah.
why we do podcasts.
Is that why we do podcasts?
I think so, because you. It
I
seems
know you
like
know why
be.
You do. I don't know why I
well,
am.
It seems
it started
like,
as a hobby.
Okay, that's it. The very first, instead of saying, what about all those things that could go wrong?
Yeah.
You said to yourself, that seems like fun, and I'm sure I'll figure it out along the way. And if it doesn't work, no big deal. So it does seem like a general, that's when, that mirrors how I start the first podcast I did on gambling. Instead of thinking about all the stuff that could go wrong, I thought about the stuff that could go right, and you told yourself, then I'll figure it out. I think it's anandamide.
Well,
anandamide.
You definitely seem to be figuring out. You're doing fantastic. The show is called The Gist. From Slate Magazine and Mike Pesca. Mike, thank you for coming on my podcast. And thank you for, I guess, putting me inadvertently on your podcast.
You're welcome and thank you.
Well, thanks again to Mike Pesca for taking time from The Gist to come over on my show. And thanks to the folks over at Politicon for hosting our interview. You can check out Mike's podcast, The Gist, from Slate Magazine on iTunes or go to slate.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave us a review. And don't forget to go on our website or click on the survey link in the show notes to take that listener questionnaire for me. I really want to get a feel for who our audience is, and if you just take a minute to fill that out, that'll be a huge help to me. If you like what I'm doing here, then I hope you'll support Kick-Ass Politics by making a donation on the website or go to gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Because starting last week, we're now ramping up to 2 podcasts a week, but that also means it's costing twice as much, most of which comes out of my pocket, to be honest, and I'm happy to do the show because I enjoy this, but if you want to pitch in, that's always greatly appreciated and really shows me that you value the effort that I put into this every week. So if you want to help out, you can donate on the website or go to gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, gripes, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. In the next episode, I'll talk with former Republican presidential candidate and Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. And she's got a lot to say about the nuclear deal with Iran, the Tea Party, Syria, the president, and the Republican candidates in 2016. So you don't want to miss it coming up in the next podcast. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. This podcast may not be reproduced without express written permission. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.